This episode is brought to you by Acorn TV. So, Leah, what show do you want to talk about today?
Very exciting new season of Harry Wild dropping this week.
Oh, Harry Wild is great. So Harry Wild is Harriet Wild, played by Jane Seymour. And she just retired and she gets mugged. And so she's recovering in her son's home.
And lucky for us, her son is a police detective.
Isn't that convenient?
She gleans a clue about one of his current cases. Mm-hmm. He is like, I got it, Ma. Stay out of it, Ma. And she's like, nope. And so she sets out to solve it herself with a very unlikely sidekick.
Very unlikely sidekick.
And I'm not giving it away this time because I felt like I did in the Modern Blog Mysteries. So now I'm zipping my lips.
Okay.
You got to get in there and watch it yourself.
So check that out and check out all the great stuff that Acorn has. Sign up for a 30-day free trial with promo code ACORN30 at acorn.tv. Hey there, it's Nick.
And it's Leah.
So we're doing another live show.
Were You Raised by Wolves Live.
And this time we're going to be on the West Coast.
Portland, Oregon, babies.
So come see us on June 15th.
And we're going to be at the Siren Theater. And the show starts at 7:30.
So go to our website, wereyouraisedbywolves.com/live, and get some tickets.
Join us.
Do you show up late for airport pickups? Do you floss your teeth in public? Do you talk about people behind their back? Were you raised by wolves? Let's find out.
Here are things that can make it better.
It's Nick Layton.
And it's Leah Bonema.
And let's just get right down to it with our Moose Boosh.
Let's get in it. Hit me with it.
So for today's Moose Boosh, I want to talk about Letitia Baldridge. And her name has come up before on the show. And I kind of mentioned her in the same breath as like Emily Post, Judith Martin. But I don't know if a lot of our listeners are familiar like with what she's really about. So I thought like, let's talk about her. So like, Leah, what do you know? What do you know about Tish?
I know literally only the things that you've told us about her.
So I've read a lot of her stuff, and I've seen her do tons of television interviews, but there's actually something a little enigmatic about her, and I can't quite place it. Like, I don't have a great sense of, like, who she really is, and it's really interesting, because Emily Post, I get her deal. Like, I get, like, how Emily Post probably lived, and, like, I understand what it would be like to be at a dinner party with her. And Judith Martin, I mean, I think we get her deal. Like, what you see is what you get with Judy. But, like, Letitia, yeah, there's just something about her. She's very cool, brilliant, great etiquette guru. But, yeah, there's just, like, something about her that I can't quite place. So let me tell you a little more about her background, and then you'll have a better sense of, like, who she is. So she grew up in Omaha, and her father was a congressman in the 30s. And then she went to Vassar and then did some grad work in Switzerland.
I literally knew you were going to say Vassar.
Well, anyone who's anyone went to Vassar. I didn't go to Vassar, but many people did. But yes, so that gives you a sense of like, okay, that's the world she's operating in. And then she lands a job at the State Department. Like right out of some grad work in Switzerland, she lands at the State Department. And all the bios of her actually make a point to say that like to get a job at the State Department at that time, which was like the 50s, you had to have secretarial skills as a woman. Like you couldn't actually just be very talented and smart. Like you had to know how to like be a stenographer or whatever like filing skills were required in those days. So like she actually had to like learn those in order to get this job at the State Department. But she landed at the State Department and then she landed in Paris as the social secretary for the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to France. And so like all the bios kind of skip over like, oh, that is not easy. You don't just show up in Paris because, like, the average person cannot have that.
Doesn't hurt to come from money and have that Vassar education. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, I think she definitely got a leg up having a father who was a congressman.
Little leg up.
So, and then she comes back from Paris, and then she works for the CIA in psychological warfare.
Woo!
And
what a life.
That's all we know about that. Very brief mention. It's actually not in most of her bios. It only comes up a couple times on the interwebs. Not a lot about this. And she was asked about it in an interview. And the only thing that she said was, quote, in retrospect, what they were doing was not so different from public relations today. Okay.
I literally, when you said psychological warfare, I thought, I see that.
Yeah, and I guess if you knew a lot about different cultures and what got to a culture and like what was sensitive, I guess that knowledge is useful for good or not good, right? I guess it's useful. It's useful information.
I love that idea that psychological warfare and public relations are hand in hand.
Yeah. And what is also interesting is that the CIA did keep an eye on her for the rest of her career. There are some things online where somebody did like FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests to the CIA. And there were like some press clippings about her like, oh, changing jobs. And it's sort of like, oh, that's interesting that you like were interested in Letitia Baldridge's job change. Like, was she always working with the CIA? Like, what's that about? So obviously impossible for us to know, but like, oh, isn't that an interesting detail?
I love that idea that she had been working for the CIA from the beginning.
Right? I mean, it is interesting. Like, oh, this young woman in Paris, like what a great agent. I mean, who would suspect?
Who would suspect?
So after she worked for the CIA, quote unquote, because who knows if that ever ended, she then ended up in Rome where she was working for the US ambassador to Italy. So now she's in Rome for a few years. Okay. I mean, how fabulous.
Okay, CIA.
Right? And so then she comes back to the United States, and then she becomes the PR director for Tiffany & Co. in New York. And she was their first female executive. And this was a time when, like, oh, women were not in those types of roles. I mean, she was one of the first female business people, you know, in the United States. I mean, she was definitely an early pioneer. And she was there when Breakfast at Tiffany's was being filmed. So as the PR director, I think she probably was like very involved. And she does talk about like meeting Audrey Hepburn and like everybody else in the cast and how cool that was.
That's so cool. I like the idea that Breakfast at Tiffany's may have subliminal CIA messages in it. I'm here to start rumors.
And at Tiffany, she tells a story of how she was single at the time, but she bought herself a full set of sterling silver flatware. Because she's like, I'm single, but I like nice things, and I don't have to be married to have like nice flatware when I entertain friends. And so I think that philosophically is kind of interesting. Because she had that vibe, which is like, I'm just going to live my life the way I want to live it, which I really appreciate.
Go Letitia.
Yeah, right? So then an old friend from, I guess, Vassar, although they were slightly different years, called her for help in D.C. And that was Jacqueline Kennedy. Mm. So basically, the idea was like, come to D.C., be my chief of staff. And so Letitia Baldridge became Jacqueline Kennedy's chief of staff in the White House. And when you think about what White House dinners were like before the Kennedys arrived, these apparently were horrible. These were not fun events at all. One long big table in the state dining room. Apparently the flower urns were so enormous, they were like oppressive and it was hard to like talk around them. And guests weren't allowed to like have drinks and there was no music until the president came downstairs. And so that could be like an hour. And so you're just like standing around with no music, no drinks, waiting for the president. And like, that's awkward. And so when Jackie Kennedy and Letitia showed up, they're like, we're going to change all this. So they had round tables, 8 or 10. There was music, there was liquor. And when you think about like the glamour of the Kennedy administration and these dinners and just all of that, like a lot of that was Letitia Baldridge. She gives credit to Jackie Kennedy for a lot of this, but like, I think at the end of the day, I think this really has the Letitia Baldridge stamp on it. I mean, I think they were both peas in a pod. I mean, they both went to Vassar, but I think Letitia, you know, with all of her time in Paris and just, I feel like the stamp on all this, I think Letitia Baldridge does not give herself enough credit for like what she really did to change entertaining in the United States.
What an incredible resume.
So then she actually was so sick of it, she left after 2 years because she was like, this is exhausting. And I'm sure it is. I mean, to work for the White House and to do state dinners and all this entertainment, I mean, it must have been totally exhausting. So she left. But then there was the assassination. And so then Letitia actually went back to D.C. to help Jacqueline Kennedy with all the funeral arrangements. So now she's back in D.C. And then she like left that D.C. life and then started her own, you know, public relations firm. And then she became like an etiquette guru in the 70s. And that's really when she became like the doyenne of etiquette. She landed on the cover of Time magazine and she had a column that was syndicated. And this was before Judith Martin, because like Judith Martin's column didn't come out until the late 70s. And by then, Letitia Baldridge was like the household name in the United States. And in the 70s, Letitia is the one who updated Amy Vanderbilt's etiquette book. And she added things like, oh, what do you do when a couple is unmarried, but you have to send them a wedding invitation? And like, that was pretty novel, you know, that was a new thing at that time.
She's like, I'm adding in the PG-13.
Yeah, she was definitely more modern, and she definitely tried to bring etiquette up to speed in terms of business. A lot of her etiquette was about, like, business etiquette and women in business and, like, who should reach for the door first, a man or a woman? And it's sort of like, well, whoever is closest. But until Letitia Baldridge was coming around, like, oh, no, no. No, the man should get the door.
I can only begin to imagine, like, you read these books that are from today, where women are on these executive floors and there's no woman's bathroom.
Right.
And that's now. And then can you imagine in the 70s, the work that she had to do to put in?
Yeah. I mean, well, that was a time when, like, oh, you couldn't get a mortgage without your husband signing it off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I think what separates her from, like, Judith Martin and Emily Post is that she really believed in the art of the bluff, which was, like, just have confidence in all these social situations. And if you don't, fake it. She's really big on faking it. And I don't necessarily think of Emily Post as, like, faking it ever. Like, I feel like Emily Post is, like, really real. And, like, Judith Martin, I feel like, is also pretty real. Like, I don't get a lot of artifice from her. Whereas I think Letitia, coming more from, like, this diplomatic place, this more, like, aristocracy place. I mean that the best way. But, like, just coming...
I just love you being like, I mean aristocracy in the best way.
No, but in terms of that being worldly and sophisticated and charming and the best host, like, you want to go to a Letitia Baldridge dinner party. I mean, like, that's a party you want to go to. She sounds like a great time. But it's sort of like, is that artifice? Like, what is behind that? Like, you might never know, you know? Maybe she's the best CIA agent ever.
I like that version of the story.
Right? And she does tell a great story about bluffing, which she was at home one Sunday night with her husband and, like, reading the paper. And she had forgotten that she invited two couples over for dinner. And they show up at 7:30. And instead of, like, saying, oh, so sorry, I totally blew it. She didn't want to admit that. So she tells her husband, get them drinks. She goes into the kitchen. Apparently she has two frozen stews, which she defrosts. She had some lettuce salad-y thing from lunch that she's going to throw away. But, like, oh, I can do something with that. She added three lettuce leaves because that's all she had. And then she served it to her guests. And she maintains that they didn't know. And it's kind of like, come on. Of course they knew. But what, you're going to tell Letitia Baldridge, globally recognized etiquette authority, that, like, did you serve us old food and did you forget we were coming? Like, of course you're not going to tell her that. But she maintains that nobody knew and she bluffed her way through it.
I always wear pajamas when people come to the door.
Oh, that's also a good point. What do you, was she wearing her best, finest? Like, was she, yeah, what was she wearing?
I walk through that door and I change. I never wear my outside clothes in the house.
Yeah, no, you're a zero to Snuggie in 2.3 seconds.
Yes.
But I think at the end of the day, her philosophy was really about nice guys finish first. And that having good manners really will get you ahead in life. And so I do like that attitude, which is like, it actually is in your best interest. You'll get ahead. You'll make friends. You'll influence people. Your life will be better at the end of the day if you have good manners.
Well, I really like that she had all these different kinds of things on her resume.
Yeah, definitely not linear at all, which I think the most interesting people are that.
Yeah, they have different places to pull from for their knowledge.
And I'll leave you with a good quote from her, which she gave to USA Today in, like, the 2000s. She says, "We ought to be vigilantes for kindness and consideration. If somebody is disrespecting somebody, we should step in, even at the risk of getting slugged over the head."
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, health and safety always trumps etiquette. So do not put yourself in harm's way where you'll get slugged in the head. But the idea that we should always step in if we see an etiquette injustice in the world, yes, I think this is very true.
Well, and sticking up for people, I like that idea.
Yeah, and that it is true. Kindness and consideration. Yeah, we should be vigilantes.
We are kindness vigilantes, which is a fun juxtaposition there.
So that's Letitia Baldridge.
Lovely.
And we're back, and now it's time to go deep.
Deep into the airport.
So for today's question of etiquette, I want to talk about airport pickups.
Which is my life.
Is it now?
I always pick people up at the airport.
So one of the wonderful things about living in New York City is that to ask someone to pick you up or drop you off at the airport is so insane. Such a bonkers request that that's not a thing. That's not a thing that happens in my world.
But I do miss it greatly when I go into New York because it's so nice after, like, that kind of a day to then see a friendly face.
Okay. I mean, yes, it is nice. It is nice to be picked up. So what are some etiquette things to keep in mind since you're such an expert?
So from the person being picked up.
Let's call them the passenger.
The passenger. That's a solid word. Okay. So I think on their end, it's to clearly communicate where you are in the airport.
Well, isn't it better to actually have a predetermined meeting spot?
Yes, I would have a predetermined, but also then I would say, hey, I can't, like, I'll know what terminal you're coming out of and what time. But then when you come out, especially if it's a big airport, I want to know what column you're standing next to.
Yes. Give me a landmark. Yes. What is the door number?
Because
yes.
Like at LAX, you'll be like, I'm at, you know, they'll have letters. So I want you to know I'm at terminal one, but I'm also at letter. So I'm heading there because it's so much chaos. And then if you're waiting and you know that person's coming, don't be like on your phone because there it's so chaotic. I want you ready to go when I pull up.
And is it better for the passenger to be the one that's waiting slightly longer than the pickup person?
Yeah, because the pickup person is going to have to circle. They can't park.
Yeah, the white zone is for loading and unloading only.
So I think you have the time and then say, I think the perfect thing is to say, did you check a bag or not check a bag? So I can guesstimate how long.
Yeah, that's hard to judge sometimes, but yes, you want to kind of try and time it out.
And then, like, I recently had a friend pick me up, which was so lovely. And they waited in the cell phone lot.
Oh, sure.
And then they said, text me when you land. And I texted them when I landed. Then I said, let me text you again when I've walked off the plane. And then they started driving.
And on my list, I want to have some conversation about, do I actually want to talk to you on the ride home? Like how much interaction.
Isn't this your friend?
Well, yes, but like sometimes after you've been traveling, I mean, depending on how long the flight was.
You cannot get a pickup. That is unbelievable.
No, but I mean, it's sometimes you don't necessarily need to have this hyped up, amped up friend energy from your driver after a long flight. You know, sometimes you need a little
mellow. They're not your driver. They're your friend who's picking you up.
Well, but you do not understand where I'm coming from on this?
I do understand where you're coming from, and I 100% disagree.
Okay.
If you don't want to, like, have friend time, then take a cab.
Yeah.
Because they're going to lose hours of their day doing this. So then for you to be like, in advance, I would like to talk about how we're going to talk.
Well, no, I don't necessarily need an advance agreement on this. But I think as the person doing the pickup, I think you want to just be sensitive to the rhythm and the energy level of your friend. You know, because sometimes somebody might be a little on the tired side and it's sort of like you want to just be mindful of like where they're at. Because that's my point.
Yeah, I'm not going to bombard them, but I'm going to be like, how are you doing? I don't want to feel like I can't speak at all because it would upset their delicate balance.
I mean, that's not what I meant. But I mean, sometimes that's
That's sort of what it sounded like. Okay. You were saying. You were like, I would like to in advance set the temperature of the car.
Oh, is that possible? Can we do that? No. Sparkling or still?
I would say it's actually harder on the person driving in an airport.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. This is all for the benefit of the person that's being picked up. I mean, this is a true favor. There's no upside other than just being a good friend for the person doing the picking.
Yeah. So that's why, I mean, obviously you can read the room when you're in the car, but I don't think you need to have some kind of a...
That's all I meant.
That's not what you meant.
No, it is. Yeah, I mean, if you're flying for 20 hours and you're just like tired and you're just like, I just need a beat.
I think that's a rhythm people work out when they're driving.
That's true.
If you're good enough friends to pick somebody up, then you're good enough friends to know their rhythm. My main thing is like, if you have your friend coming and you've told them you're going to be there, then don't go back into the airport and dilly-dally because circling an airport is the worst.
Who's doing that? Who's dillying?
There's somebody who's dilly-dallying. And I just want to say, don't do that. Be ready at the curb that you said you were at.
Yeah. You got to be ready. Yeah. Which I think is such an etiquette theme. Is there like, be ready. Be ready to roll.
Ready to roll.
And are we assisting with luggage? Yes. We're going to help with luggage or is that too taxi-like?
It depends, I think, completely on the situation.
Okay.
In a huge airport where, I mean, in LAX, I'm not opening my door. There's people, unless I got a great spot to pull in, I'm almost in one of the lanes. You're going to have to pop. Yeah. I'm going to pop the trunk. You're going to throw it like it's a Olympic event. I'm going to close the trunk and then you're going to jump and I'm almost going to be moving already.
Yeah, that's kind of how that goes.
Unless you need help with your bag. And then I think if you need help with your bag, like if it's a huge bag or like, you know, you have trouble carrying your bag, I'm actually going to park in short-term parking and I'm going to meet you at the baggage claim.
Oh.
And then I'm going to take it so then you don't have to worry about it.
Oh, that's very nice. Oh, that's really nice. Oh, you're a really good friend.
Well, I actually think that's just so much easier for everybody. Like if your bag is too much, just let me know in advance, I'll park.
And then I guess it's nice as the passenger to like bring something. How do we thank you? How do we thank you for this service? We just reciprocate the next time. Like what's a nice thing to do?
I'll just take a thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So definitely be appreciative. Don't just assume that they were obligated to do this for you, I guess.
Yeah. I think people want to see that sometimes how you get to just spend time with people. People have busy schedules or whatever. You're like, I'll pick you up and then we can talk. Unless you're Nick, and then I will be allotted specific speaking times.
Oh, great. Yeah. Here's my calendar. We'll find an open spot for you. So that's airport pickups.
Easy peasy. I guess you could offer gas.
Oh, yeah. Pay for some gas money, the price of the short-term parking.
Can we stop for snacks on the way back?
Bring some snacks from whatever destination you came from. That could be nice.
Do you want some snacks from the Newark airport?
Ooh, here's some sushi I bought 8 hours ago.
Here's some sushi I got from the Newark airport.
I hear it's great.
A half a day ago.
Mmm.
I can't wait to go back. It was so good.
Yeah, no, I'm going to purposely try to book a flight through Newark just so I can experience this magic.
I actually recently had a friend had a layover. I know you guys have mocked me relentlessly for this, but a friend had a layover in Newark and I was like, you got to get the sushi. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you where it is.
Okay.
It's that good.
Yeah, no, I look forward to trying the omakase menu. Uish desne. Now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by Acorn TV. And Acorn TV streams world-class mysteries, dramas, and comedies from around the world. So Leah, I am looking for a series about an amateur detective. I don't want professionals. What do you got?
I'm glad you asked, Nick. Because as we know at home, I'm obsessed with mysteries. We have the professional detectives, then we have the amateurs that obviously have a gift and they maneuver their way in there. And Acorn TV has a lot of choices for you. You could go with Madame Blanc.
Right. Because she's an antiques dealer and uses that knowledge to solve crimes.
I mean, it's great knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have Agatha Raisin, which I have discussed multiple times. She was a PR person, very confident woman, wears the wrong shoes to every occasion, which I love. And we also have Harry Wilde.
Yes, Jane Seymour.
And I enjoy all of those shows very much.
So you out there, sign up for a 30-day free trial with promo code ACORN30 at acorn.tv. And now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by Book of the Month.
I am loving getting to pick my Books of the Months. Is that the appropriate way to pluralize it? I'm loving getting my Books of the Month, but for multiple months now. So Books of the Months.
Yeah. Oh, it's so easy to order. It's super convenient. Their selection is wonderful. And this month I picked The Ministry of Time, which sounds wild. It is about a civil servant who's helping to manage some government program where time travelers from other eras like come to help with something. And then they apparently fall in love. What? So like this guy from the 1800s is like, what's Spotify? And then like, you know, love happens. So I cannot wait to receive this.
You know, love happens.
And you out there, you're going to love Book of the Month. So you can get your first book for just $5 with code PEDALS. So go to bookofthemonth.com and use code PEDALS to get your first book for just $5. And we're back. And now it's time to take some questions from you all in the wilderness.
Ow!
So our first question is, quote, what's your take on brushing your teeth and or flossing in office bathrooms? Personally, I couldn't care less. But a few weeks ago, my group chat went in on how nasty it is to see people in office bathrooms brushing their teeth. But flossing, which is more common, is not nasty. I personally am not an office toothbrusher, but I can't stop thinking about this. It haunts me. Is it nasty? Is it impolite? Is it because bathrooms are gross? But if it's because it's gross to do things in your mouth in a semi-public bathroom, why is flossing not gross? Is it the implication that you didn't brush your teeth at home?
I've never thought it was gross that people brush their teeth in an office bathroom.
Yeah, this is an interesting question.
I mean, don't leave your, you know how like there's residue from the toothpaste, like don't leave the sink dirty, but where else are you supposed to brush your teeth?
Yeah, I guess that's really what it is. Because like as an etiquette response, we'd be like, oh, well, don't brush your teeth at the kitchen in the office, right? We would say like, oh, don't do it in the kitchen area. Go to the bathroom. So we would actually recommend people should go to the bathroom for this.
Yes.
And like flossing, like, oh, don't floss at your open desk situation. Like go in private, which would be like the bathroom. then the question is like, oh, if I wanted to do this in the bathroom, am I supposed to go into a private stall now?
And do it into the toilet?
Right? So like, is that what people want to have happen? And like, that doesn't make sense.
It seems like they want them not brushing their teeth, but I think that they should just maybe get over it because this person has great dental hygiene and we're going to call it nasty. They're doing it in the bathroom.
Yeah. And I mean, I brush my teeth throughout the day and I floss. Like after lunch, I always brush my teeth and floss after lunch.
I just think that they're already doing it in the allotted area to do bathroom things.
It is in the designated area.
And why would we be anti-teeth brushing?
I think we need more teeth brushing out there.
You know what's nasty, quote unquote, is a root canal.
Okay. Speaking from experience, huh?
Speaking from very recent experience.
Yeah, that's not a fun time.
It's not a fun time. I don't like the idea that we're toothbrush shaming people.
Yeah. I think flossing and brushing teeth, I think it is in a similar world. It's in a similar world of dental hygiene.
I want to be clear. I don't think our letter writer is toothbrush shaming. I think our letter writer is trying to understand why these people are offended by it.
Yeah. So I think your friends are wrong.
We think your friends are wrong.
Yeah. So you can let them know that. So our next thing comes from a middle school class. So a teacher has written us a bunch of questions from her students, and I've taken three of them. And what's wonderful is that, yes, these are from middle schoolers, but oh, isn't it interesting how this is relevant for any age? Like, these are not limited to middle school age.
Nope. Same themes as adult age.
So the first one is, quote, my teacher just told the class incorrect information, and I know for a fact that they are wrong. I looked it up. Should I correct them? If so, how would I correct them?
I mean, I feel like you just let them know by sending in this email through your teacher.
Oh, that's a valid point. Yeah, not subtle. Yeah. For me, it's all about timing. Timing is key. So I think we want to speak to them privately after class. I don't think we want to do this in front of the entire class.
Yes. And I also think that because that could actually backfire on you.
And I think we want to do the correction in a way which is not like, oh, you're definitely wrong, but like, oh, I heard this and this is my understanding. And to have like some conversation about it because maybe you misheard or maybe there was more nuance or maybe you're wrong. So like, I think coming at it from like, oh, this is a conversation about this rather than like, oh, you're wrong.
Yeah, I think that's great.
The next question from our middle schoolers is, what should I do if other people I've been friends with for a while start talking behind my back about me? Do I confront them? Do I ignore them? What is the best thing to do?
I mean, I think this is such a great question because this is going to go on in one form or another throughout life. So like, to get these skill sets early.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely not something you're going to outgrow. For sure.
Nick and I were just talking before this we started recording about how I'm working on new skill sets and it's so uncomfortable, but the more I do them, the less it will be uncomfortable.
Practice makes perfect. So for this, I think it comes down to what is the relationship we want with these people moving forward? Like if these are actually friends and we want to maintain that relationship, well then, yeah, let's address it head on. Hey, I heard that you said this about me. I want to talk about it. Is this how you really feel?
Yes.
And then we are just listening. We just want to hear what they have to say because then based on what they say and how they say it and what they feel, then you can decide, oh, is this a relationship I want to maintain? Because yeah, if these are people who are like, oh, I don't respect you. Yeah, I said it. I don't respect you. I don't like you. Well then, yeah, maybe you don't want a relationship with these people.
And then I think we can also tell them how it made us feel once they confirm or deny whether or not this is true.
Yes. And then I think often there's going to be an apology or maybe this was a misunderstanding. We're going to make some clarifications and we're going to make a plan to move forward. You know, I think ultimately that's usually how this conversation should sort of go. But I think we don't want to talk about them behind their back. I don't think we want to just like pretend it never happened and make things awkward. So I think nipping it in the bud, that's kind of how I would do this.
And then Nick, at the beginning of it, you said, are these people we want to continue a relationship with? So you think if it's not somebody you want to continue a relationship with?
Well, then they are classmates. I mean, I think what's interesting is as we get older, a new category of people in our lives sort of emerges, like the acquaintance. Like in kindergarten, we didn't have acquaintances, right? You didn't have somebody in your kindergarten class. You're like, oh, have a good nap, have a good day. And that was all, you know, it was like, oh, these are my friends or these are not my friends. It's very binary. But as we get older, there's a category of just like acquaintances. And so middle school, I think, is a little transitional. You know, like we're not best friends with everybody in the class. And yeah, maybe these are people that you'll be friendly with, cordial. Nice to see you. Oh, did you get the homework from last night? You know, we can have those conversations, but like, oh, I want to hang out with you on the weekend. Yeah, maybe these aren't those people. So based on how they feel about you and how you feel about them, yeah, we move them in our theater.
Yeah. And then we also know this information for later.
Yes, we file it away. Yes. And our third question from our middle schoolers is, quote, your friend invites you somewhere. You have no excuse. You just don't want to go. What should you do?
Oh, I think this is a great question because I don't want to do so many things.
And as you get older, I think the true sign of being an adult is when people cancel plans on you and you're thrilled. You're like, oh, I can't make it tonight. Oh, no worries. And then you stay home and you're just like so excited.
Oh, I think because doing stand-up is so going out and so public and stuff. When I'm not doing stand-up, I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And so I just say, thanks so much for the invite. I can't make it.
Yeah. I think that's all you have to do. You could say like, I'm in for the night, but thank you. So we always want to thank them for the invitation, but just, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to just have a quiet night in. And that's legit. I feel like we should not be ashamed of saying, oh, we're just having a quiet night in alone.
Or an afternoon, depending.
Whatever time.
Whatever it is.
An afternoon in, a day in. I'm planning on not leaving the house. Thank you so much. And now the key though is we don't want to continuously do that to the point where they get the hint that like, oh, you never want to do anything. So you want to reciprocate future invitations or you may want to accept future invitations if you actually want to hang out with this person at some point in the future. Because if you do decline too many invitations, you know, people do sometimes think, oh, they just don't want to be invited anymore.
Yeah, I think you could say, thank you so much. I can't do blankety blank, but hey, next Friday, I'm going to this movie. Do you want to come?
Bingo. Yeah. So reciprocating is always nice for sure.
That seems like a nice thank you. No. Deflecting, setting up plans for later.
And this is a great life skill too, for sure. So thank you for these great questions.
Thank you so much.
And you out there, do you have any questions for us? Let us know. You can let us know through our website, WereRaisedByWolves.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text message, 267-CALL-RBW. And now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by Brooklinen.
Brooklinen is the internet's favorite sheets.
That's right. And they're great. They sent us some sheets and I'm sleeping on their Percal, white, of course. And they're crisp. They're cool. They don't sleep too hot, which is definitely the thing I do not want in sheets. So they're the perfect temperature for me.
And I feel like coming into a new season, it's the perfect time for a refresh, right? You get new colors. You get new patterns. You recreate your whole sleeping space.
Or you can switch the fabrics. So Brooklinen actually has fresh linen and it's designed in Brooklyn, made in Portugal, and their wash linen is made with 100% European flax. So you can get the lightweight essentials necessary to upgrade your space for the summer from Brooklinen. So visit in-store or online at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. And use code WOLVES for $20 off your order of $100 or more. And now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by the Kelly Corrigan Wonders Podcast.
She has written 4 New York Times bestsellers and hosts a great interview show on PBS. She's been on the Today Show a bunch, and the Oprah magazine calls Kelly the voice of a generation.
Recently on her podcast, Kelly Corrigan Wonders, Kelly teamed up with Christy Turlington Burns for a special series talking to icons like Bono, Spike Lee, Jennifer Garner, Amy Schumer, and Cindy Crawford about their mothers. They share tender, candid, and often funny family stories that will help you reflect on your own childhood in new ways.
Don't miss these magical conversations on the Kelly Corrigan Wonders podcast. Listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders wherever you're listening to this podcast.
And now it's time to play a game we like to call Vent or Repent.
Vent or Repent.
Which is our opportunity to vent about some bad etiquette experience we've had recently, or we can repent for some etiquette faux pas we've committed. So, Leah, would you like to vent or repent?
I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, gladly. So I would like to vent. So I was recently in a hotel, and the bellhop had all my luggage, and usually I just like, oh, I'll just take care of it. But they really insisted in this hotel, like, oh, no, we must. And so I'm in the elevator with the bellhop, and it's kind of a small elevator. And the bellhop is in front of me at the door, because he got in after me. And he has all my luggage. And I don't have that much luggage, but like there's a wheelie bag and there's like a thing on top of it. And so we get to my floor and ding, and the door opens and he's like, after you. And it's sort of like, I can't leave because you're in the way. And he was so insistent that the only polite thing to do was to make sure I got off the elevator first. I climbed over my luggage. I actually had to like lift my leg like I was mounting a horse over my suitcase, climb over it, and then get out of the elevator. And this person thought like, oh, this is, oh, I'm so polite. What good etiquette I have by making sure the guest leaves first. And it's sort of like, this was not the way to handle this at all. And sometimes I think we confuse like the polite thing, quote unquote, with like, oh, what is the actual polite thing? Which is like usually the more practical thing. Like, let's not inconvenience me. I think trumps the idea of like, oh, I should get off the elevator first. But it was actually so amazing as this was happening because I was like, oh, are we doing this? Oh, we're doing this. Okay, glad I'm limber. Let's do this. But I literally, I climbed over and I did that thing where when you actually like climb over something and you kind of have a couple of hops as you're regaining your balance. Like that's what is happening with me in this elevator. So yeah, that happened.
I wish I was in that elevator as like a little camera on the wall.
There was a camera. Oh, I should ask for the footage. I should call the hotel and be like, oh, I need the security footage. Oh, what happened? An etiquette crime. And we got to pull the footage.
I wish we could pull footage for etiquette crimes. That would be so funny.
That should be a category. Yes. So, Leah, would you like to vent or repent?
Oh, I am going to vent.
All right. Let's hear it.
And I actually, in the moment, told this story on my Instagram. And many of our Were You Raised by Wolves fans were like, can't wait to hear about this. And somebody was like, is this a vent or repent? And I was like, oh, no, I'm proud of how I handle myself. Because I guess I could feel bad that I responded like an animal, but I really don't at all.
It is wonderful. So explain to the nice people what happened.
So I'm walking back from the gym. Mm-hmm. And I have a tote bag. I'm carrying everything in a tote bag that is from an animal rescue, a dog rescue that I used to volunteer with. Uh-huh. And a woman is standing. I don't realize there's a woman next to me. I have my earphones in, but I hear her and her voice is elevated. She's actually yelling at me. It's not like said as a joke. And she's like, you don't like cats. You can't save cats. Mm-hmm. And this really just reminded me of how people talk to us on social media or communicate with everybody where you're like, I love oranges. And they're like, you hate apples. And I wanted to get inside the brain of a person who would speak this way. I think when I turned around and engaged with her, I saw her face change. Like, I think she thought I was literally going to go, oh, you're right. I love cats. Or.
And just to clarify, you have a tote bag about dog rescuing and this person sees it and interprets this as, therefore, you hate all animals that are not dogs.
Yes, that's how she's taken it.
Only dogs matter to you.
Yes.
That's how we interpret this tote bag.
Yes.
Okay. Continue.
And I just...
And you decided to engage with her.
Yes.
Okay, well, so that's on you.
No, I'm glad it was because otherwise I would still be angry. I got it all out on her.
So what happened then?
Well, I sort of explained that my tote bag has nothing to do with her and I don't understand where in her head me saying I support dogs is referencing cats in any way. I could like cats, I could not like cats. Also, she could get her own tote bag. I also said in the heat of the moment that I like my mother and I like whales and they're not in the tote bag. And how big does she want this tote bag to be?
Although what a great tote bag.
It's just like
whales, your mom.
Thrillers, ice cream. I mean, it just goes the list. Yeah. You're like, this tote bag is the whole city. And then she meowed at me.
That's the best.
That's really, and I'm saying best. This is like a woman, this is just a person on their way to the supermarket who decided to take my bag and make it about them. And I just couldn't let it go.
And how was the meowing done?
She sort of did a meow, like it was sort of like she was backing away. I don't think she thought I was going to engage with her. So as soon as I turned around and just, I leaned in. She sort of just kind of backed in alone. And I think she felt like she was just trying to be a cute cat to be like, look, we're cute. And I was like, you get, I'm not commenting on cats at all. Right. She was like, meow. And I was like, okay, wow. I literally go, wow.
Wow. Yeah. And for the record, you like cats.
I do like cats. I mean, the easiest way to have handled this would have been like, I hate cats. I mean, I feel like that would have...
That was the easiest way? No.
The easiest
way would have been to say, oh, I left my cat tote bag at home. That's for tomorrow. I alternate.
No, I'm not. I would never say that. I would say this bag is made out of cats. I would say that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're in for a penny and for a pound. Right?
I mean, but I didn't want it because I do like cats.
Well, if you're explaining, you're losing.
And I just wanted to get into this. I know, but I just wanted to be like, what is happening in your brain? How did we get here?
Yeah, how did we get here? Yeah.
And I got nothing on that, but I personally felt very satisfied walking away from this.
I feel like getting meowed at is satisfying.
It was. I was like, oh, okay, this is what we're dealing with. This is where we're at.
Because you don't get meowed at and think, oh, clearly I'm the problem.
Yeah.
Right? I think once you get meowed at, you're like, oh no, this is not about me.
She meowed more than once.
She meowed more than once?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I mean, I hope I get to see her again, to be honest.
Well, I'm certainly going to get you a cat tote bag for Christmas now.
No, I'm going to get a tote bag that says everything but cats. And I'm just going to wear it.
Okay, making friends in Los Angeles, Leah.
I will say that it just feels so much better to deal with it in the moment than to go back and be like, why would someone do that? I asked why. I got a meow. And I think that she has been on social media too long. And this is what has happened.
You got closure.
I got closure on that one.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What have we learned?
I learned an entire histoire on Letitia Baldridge.
Right? Isn't she fascinating?
So fascinating.
And I learned that you don't like cats.
This is how rumors start.
Meow.
Can I actually say about meows really quickly now that you just did that? So you sure. know, when I was born, my parents had a cat named Delicate Flower.
Okay.
Who was one of the great loves of my life. And my parents would put Delicate Flower, and Delicate Flower was very large. Would put a Delicate Flower and I into a laundry basket and bring us out into the studio.
Oh, their pottery studio.
Yes. And so Delicate Flower and I would like hang out. So it is possible that I have been told that I meowed at the cat at a very young age. So I am pro cat.
Okay, so you are pro meowing.
I'm pro meowing to in the proper place, which is to a cat.
Context is key.
Context is key here. You want to meow at a cat? I get it.
Well, thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Nick.
And thanks to you out there for listening. I'd send a handwritten note on my custom stationery if I could.
He would.
So for your homework this week, we want you to tell some people about our show. Tell some friends. Tell some family members.
Have them send in their gossip.
Yeah, about you. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. All right, Leah, it's time for Cordials of Kindness, the part of the show that you make us do, but I only give you 30 seconds to do it. Ready, set, go.
So I wrote a thank you note to this person, and this person actually said, oh my goodness, I can't believe you sent me a note. That's neither here nor there, but very here because it's our podcast. But
very here, yes.
I was having a very hard couple of weeks, and I posted this book on my social media that I'm 1,008th in line for at the library.
Okay.
And my friend, this person that I know, but not like, no, like I know you, was like, hey, I have extra Audible points. Let me just get you that book. Would you like that? I mean, just out of nowhere. And it was just like the kindest, nicest random gesture from somebody. And it really pulled me out of my funk.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Isn't that nice?
And for me, I want to read a nice review we just got, which is, quote, the world would be such a better place if everyone listened to this podcast. So smart, funny, informative, and polite. Etiquette is sexy.
Wow.
Etiquette is sexy, Leah.
That's a whole other kind of meowing, by the way. That's a different category.
That's etiquette after dark. Get ready. This episode is brought to you by Acorn TV. So, Leah, What show do you want to talk about today?
Very exciting new season of Harry Wild dropping this week.
Oh, Harry Wild is great. So Harry Wild is Harriet Wild, played by Jane Seymour. And she just retired and she gets mugged. And so she's recovering in her son's home.
And lucky for us, her son is a police detective.
Isn't that convenient?
She gleans a clue about one of his current cases. Mm-hmm. He is like, I got it, Ma. Stay out of it, Ma. And she's like, nope. And so she sets out to solve it herself with a very unlikely sidekick.
Very unlikely sidekick.
And I'm not giving it away this time because I felt like I did in the Modern Blog Mysteries. So now I'm zipping my lips. Okay. You got to get in there and watch it yourself.
So check that out and check out all the great stuff that Acorn has. Sign up for a 30-day free trial with promo code ACORN30 at acorn.tv. Now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by Acorn TV. And Acorn TV streams world-class mysteries, dramas, and comedies from around the world. So Leah, I am looking for a series about an amateur detective. I don't want professionals. What do you got?
I'm glad you asked, Nick. Because as we know at home, I'm obsessed with mysteries. We have the professional detectives, then we have the amateurs that obviously have a gift and they maneuver their way in there. And Acorn TV has a lot of choices for you. You could go with Madame Blanc.
Right. Because she's an antique dealer and uses that knowledge to solve crimes.
I mean, it's great knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have Agatha Raisin, which I have discussed multiple times. She was a PR person, very confident woman, wears the wrong shoes to every occasion, which I love. And we also have Harry Wild.
Yes, Jane Seymour.
And I enjoy all of those shows very much.
So you out there, sign up for a 30-day free trial with promo code ACORN30 at acorn.tv.